हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा। सो थैंक यू ऑल वेरी मच फॉर ज्वाइनिंग टुडे सेशन। सो टुडे वी विल बी स्टार्टिंग द फिफ्थ सेशन ऑफ आवर भक्त्यालोका। सो वी हैव बीन डिस्कसिंग फ्रॉम द फर्स्ट एसे of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur in this book, which is on Atyahara, which is overeating or overaccumulating. So last couple of sessions, we have been discussing on this theme of Bhaktialoka. While in the first two sessions, we did an introduction and an overview of the book, both Nectar of Instruction, and then we also discussed about the role of Bhaktialoka in our practice of Krishna consciousness, how relevant it is. So at this point, I would like to request Radha Pramod Prabhu to share his recap, and then we will start our discussion. Over to you, Prabhu.
ओम ज्ञान तिमिरंदस्य ज्ञानांजन शलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्री गुरवे नमः. So we are discussing on this text two, the six faults that destroy bhakti. So atyahara prayasasya prajalponimagraha janasangasya lolimcha shadbhir bhakti nashyati. So the six things: atyahara is overeating or over collecting, prayasa is over endeavoring, prajalpa talking unnecessarily about material things, niyamagraha being too much attached to rules and or rejecting rules, and janasanga is associating with worldly minded people, laulya is being greedy for mundane achievements. So we are discussing on the first one, atyahara. So here overeating or too much collecting. So ahara is bhojan, either eating or it is enjoying the objects of the five senses. So eyes, with nose, ears, and all that is also one type of atyahara. Ati plus ahara, over indulgence with any of the senses or enjoyment. Now engaging of the senses, it is actually it cannot be avoided. We have senses, we engage them. Krishna says nahi kaschit kshanamapi jati tishtata karma kit kartaih avashyak karma sarva prakriti jayar gune. So we are helplessly forced to act. So we have senses, they will make us to act. And somebody says, or another reason also Krishna says, that we cannot maintain ourselves. So sharira yatra piche nahi prasidet akarmana, we cannot maintain ourselves. So these are the two reasons we have to engage our senses. We cannot be either for maintaining and so, but the these activities with the senses should not be done in a mood of enjoyment. So material life, there is sensory engagement based on raga and desha. Now we have senses, we engage them. So in a materialistic life, it is based on I like, I don't like. But now when you come to spiritual life, it should be based on anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya vajana. It is favorable to bhakti or unfavorable. Now, if for a person, we free, for a yogi, Krishna is telling yuktahara viharasya yukteshtasya karmasu. You should engage the senses in a regulated way. If it is too extreme, then he cannot be a yogi. We are practicing bhakti yoga. It should be in a very regulated way. Then only we will be called a yogi. And that is what is favorable for us. And then for a yogi, he should also understand this. Another and very important understanding you should have, that it is done by material nature. Naiva kinchit karomiti yukto manneta tatvavit pashyan shrinvan sprashan jagran ashnan gachan swashan swapan pralapan visrjan grahnan unmishan nimishan api indriyan indiyateshu vartante iti dharayan. So it said that he should know that I am walking, I am sleeping, and I am doing any activity is actually done by the material nature. So it should be done in a regulated way, and it should be understood that it is done by the material nature. So this is a right understanding of what is happening. So then we get the sense objects. We should accept it as Krishna's mercy and understand that I am not the doer. The senses are interacting with the sense objects during all the activities. So with that right understanding for the right purpose, engage the senses in sense objects. So we know the senses and we know what is the purpose, but only as much as required and favorable for Krishna consciousness. Engaging them for keeping the body and mind healthy in regulation and in practicing bhakti nicely. So that is the purpose we understood with senses. And how much and how much should a devotee engage senses? The formula is yukta vairagya. So this is the most important. Anasakta vishayan yatharam upayanjate nirbhande krishna sambandhe yuktam vairagyam chate. Three things: detachment from sense object, only suitable objects must be utilized. So, and which I don't have weakness for, and that objects must be persistently used only in Krishna's service and never for sense gratification. Then we have seen the four levels of sense enjoyment. One time, when initially we use for we want to use for Krishna's service, but we succumb using for our own sense gratification. So we should avoid it. Then we can dovetail, okay, I have some propensities to, so I can drive or cook, I can utilize in Krishna service. Third is, I am detached from the object, but I am utilizing in Krishna service. And the fourth level is, you spontaneously engage in the object in serving Krishna, because you have that love for Krishna. So then, how we can avoid this atyahara? By following the principles of yukta vairagya. So then, there is no vairagya and shushta vairagya. No vairagya is, everything is fit to be utilized in Krishna service, but we end up in using our person's gratification, or we reject all the things blindly. So these two things should be avoided. So atyahara is accepting sense objects in the spirit of enjoyment. Solution is, if somebody is having the spirit of enjoyment, then accepts in sense objects as Lord's mercy, as far as required, favorable for devotional service. So if the sense objects are honestly accepted as Lord's mercy, then yukta vairagya is easily attained. And then there are some things, if somebody is not having this, he is so much conditioned, for him it is said that they can at least start detailing little bit, and then eventually they can come to yukta har stage. So what we discuss last week, we'll see. So then we were discussing in the last session that how should and how much should a devotee engage his senses. So for this yukta vairagya, there are three things. So we have discussed. So he should ask himself three questions. So do I really need this for Krishna's service? If I am using it for yukta vairagya, these are three questions. Do I really need this for Krishna's service? The second is, am I going to use this just for Krishna's service or also for my sense gratification? And third important is, after utilizing the object, am I feeling enhanced inspiration to serve Krishna? So if the answer all the above question is yes, then that thing can be utilized in Krishna's service as yukta vairagya. This house. And for us, avoiding atyahara means trying to cultivate yuktahara. So this is the only solution we have. So, and whatever is required, only we should take that much, and taking more or less will not yield auspicious results. If the practitioner takes or accumulates more than necessary, his spiritual life will be lost, and does not properly accumulate, then the body, which is his means of worship, will not be protected. So extreme should not be there. I'll completely reject or overdoing. So that is not favorable. Now then, Bhaktivinoda Thakur tells these two things: his conditional urge and constitutional injunction. So constitutional change. So conditional urge is the first shloka of envoy, like Vacha Vegam, Jifva Vegam, Udara Upastha Vegam. So this comes under the conditions. So like we feel hungry, we eat something, and then after that hunger is pacified. Like I have a desire to eat something. Once I eat, then it is pacified. So the craving is stopped. So this is a conditional nature. There is constitutional change, like this is atyahara prayasa. So we try to change the way we think in atyahara. So how much we'll be able to tolerate the urge of hunger depends on our inner constitution. So we are changing the whole system inside so that the externals will also change very easily. So when we resist atyahara, we develop an inner constitution which can easily resist the conditional urge of jihva and udarvegam. So this is very important, that how atyahara will protect us from doing vachavegam, manasa, jihva and udarvegam. And then is there are two levels of types of devotees, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, because that time there is no an institutional setup. Here householders means who are all sadhakas, and renunciant is who have come after he has reached a nishtha level like that. So for them, Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives what is atyahara and they should evolve. For sadhakas or unmarried or married, whoever is there, devotional maturity of other family members has to be considered. So in a family, it is not that it comes from our family background, family tradition or something comes. The bhakti beej is an individual thing. So sometimes wife will have, sometimes husband will have, children may have, may not have. And their growth of their bhakti lata beej also varies. So based on that, there should be some considerations. And they can collect for the maintenance of their family and earn and save according to religious principles, but not earn too much to save too much. Also, whatever they have earned, they should engage in serving the Lord, devotees, guests, family members and themselves. And then know how to do it properly, applying them. They need some practical guidance from a person who also went through the same situation, he has applied and have come out of it. So you need such a guidance who can properly help them. So a similar experienced mature person. Now when it comes to renunciate on an ishta level, so he who has given up home because of natural detachment is at the stage of bhava, and he should be satisfied by alms he has obtained. He should not collect at all, does not collect at all, and does not eat more than he needs, especially palatable dishes and all. And what Srila Prabhupada speaks about atyahara is he gives this understanding that Lord has three potencies, antaranga, bahiranga, and tatastha, and jivas belong to the tatastha and has to be under the control of either antaranga and bahiranga shaktis. So then he says, who is a Mahatma? Who is a broad-minded person? Who is under the control of internal potency? Mahatma namasu maam partha, daivi prakriti maashrita, bhajant ananya manasu, bhajant ananya manasu, jnatva bhutadim abhyam. He says that daivi prakriti maashrita refers to control of either internal potency or pleasure potency, Srimati Radharani. Now, in that situation, he engages in natural constitutional activity of the soul. So he constantly engages in devotional service, and they are busy in satisfying the senses of the Lord. Only when a person satisfies the senses of Supreme Lord, he is called a Mahatma. Now, opposite to Mahatmas, so Mahatmas, they are convinced of performing every activity for pleasure of Krishna and have the ability to do at the present because of their conditions, but they have. So they may not have the ability to do, but they have the desire to do. They have faith. There are Duratmas, they are cripple-minded. These people, they are always engaged in satisfying their senses. So Prabhupada nicely separates these two understandings. So if a person has a desire to serve the Lord, is also a Mahatma. These people are always interested in their own sense gratification. And they do, sometimes we see that they are doing some nice social service and all, altruism and socialism and all. So it's an external sense gratification. These activity have no spiritual value, and Duratmas are put under the control of Lord's external potency, Mahamaya. So, and they will be getting influenced by all these three folds of miseries, Adibodhika, Adhyatmika, Adidaivika Kleshas. The last thing we heard, like, okay, if there is a selfish devotee and there is a very selfless, detached nationalist, who is better? Now, if we see that it looks very natural, somebody feels, oh, he's so selfless. But the action may be selfless, action of a devotee may be selfish, but it is because of his conditioning nature he is selfish. But his conviction is right that he wants to serve Krishna ultimately. But whereas a nationalist person, he may be very selfless, that is his conditioning, but he don't have any regard for Krishna. He don't want to become a devotee of Krishna. So then Prabhupada talks about prohibition in Atyahara. Animals have no problem in Atyahara because they, whatever is necessary, that much only they take. They don't accumulate. If rice bag is on the road, they don't go and collect it. So similarly, everyone requires possessions such as food, grains, clothing, money and other things necessary for maintenance of the body. But one should not collect more than necessary. So that's why what are the basic needs? How we come to know? We have to take guidance from very advanced mature devotees. So it will be very practical for us. So Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. Jai. Thank you very much. It was very nice, solid recap. I am not going to recap all because it has been very nicely done already. So at this point of time, you know, we have discussed. I'll just do a quick. What are the sections that we have covered? I'm not going to do a recap now. Recap has already been done very nicely. We saw the history of Upadeshamrita, how and when. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this was spoken by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Puri, and how you know, this was further compiled by Srila Rupa Goswami. We saw this, and then we saw this topic of understanding the relevance of Bhaktya Loka by understanding the flow of nectar of instruction. We saw this topic. And so therefore this Bhaktya Loka is actually talking about a lifestyle and a value system which is very conducive for a practicing devotee. And in that, so this Bhaktya Loka is from verse 2 and 3 of verse 2 and verse 3 of Nectar of Instruction. So in that we saw the first essay is on Atyahara. So Atyahara, we saw, is overeating or too much collecting. So we saw this. In essence, if I have to summarize this, the means of overcoming Atyahara, as described by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, is to follow Yukta Vairagya. So Yukta Vairagya is the means to overcome Atyahara. And we saw so many other such details. And we saw the difference between Vacho Vegam, Krodha Vegam, you know, which is described in the first verse. You know, they refer to the conditional urges. And what is described in the second and third verses describes a constitutional change that one has to implement to actually overcome the, in order to develop, you can say, an inner immunity to resist the conditional urges. So when Atyahara is followed, then one develops the inner immunity to overcome Jihva Vegam and Udara Vegam. Like that, similarly, the other things should be understood. We saw this, right? So he says that one cannot stay without performing, without engaging the senses. So just like the Jnana Yogis have also engaged the senses, the Ashtanga Yogis also engage the senses in activities, but they have a very clear cut understanding of the nature of body and soul. And with that understanding, they engage. But when a devotee engages his senses in the objects of sense gratification, so he not just have the understanding of the difference between body and soul, but he engages it with the understanding of Anukulyasya Sankalpa Pratikulyasya Varjanam. So, and then he says, in essence, it is the means of avoiding Atyahara is to understand what is Yukta Vairagya, and one should at least be engaged at the stage of either dovetailing or yukta vairagya in order to avoid atyahara. And in this way, slowly one can come to the stage of spontaneous devotional service. So then we saw a very precise understanding of atyahara is that if one accepts sense objects in the spirit of enjoyment, it is satyahara. If it is accepted in the spirit of service, called it is then yukta vairagya. So then practicing yukta vairagya means to accept the objects of sense gratification in a mood of accepting the mercy of the Lord, right? So in the mood of mercy of the Lord, that is actually yukta vairagya. Okay, so then how this applies to the ancients and the householders we saw. Householders should earn their livelihood according to religious principles, and that those savings should be used to serve the Lord, the devotees, the guests, family members and themselves. And where to draw the line, how much to whom, we saw that this needs practical guidance, live guidance, that is most important. But whereas a renunciant will not collect at all, and if a renunciant is not satisfied with the alms that he receives, then he is guilty of atyahara. So, and after receiving it, if he eats more than what he needs, that is also atyahara, like that. So then we saw Srila Prabhupada's understanding. He talks about the tatastha nature of the jivas, how they are either under the antaranga shakti or the bahiranga shakti. Then how those under antaranga shakti are called mahatmas, whereas those who are under the bahiranga shakti are called as duratmas. And how Prabhupada talks about activities of focused sense enjoyment and extended sense gratification in the form of altruism, nationalism and all that. He talks about that. And then he talks about everyone requires food, grains, clothing, money, etc. So, but one should accept it for the maintenance of the body, but not collect more than necessary for the for his actual basic needs. And if followed, then there is no problem. But generally, a human being does not tend to follow this, but animals perfectly follow. Therefore, there is no problem of atyahara. Prabhupada gives the example of bag of rice. Birds will come and take a few grains and go, but a human being will gather the whole bag like that. And because of which the entire world is suffering. So this is where we ended our discussion last week. So at this point of time, I will pause to see if there are any discussion points, comments on this theme. You can please raise your hands and we can have a discussion. And then once this gets over, after the discussion, then we will discuss some important points from the purport of Srila Bhakti Rakshak Sridhar Swami Maharaj, who was a dear god brother of Srila Prabhupada. So if there are any quick discussion points, comments, questions, you can please raise your hands and then we can have a share. Anything anyone would like to share, add, ask? Okay. So if there is no question or no discussion point, then I think we will move ahead and start discussing from the purport of Srila, from the commentary of Srila Bhakti Rakshak Sridhar Swami Maharaj. Okay. So we are going to discuss from the commentary by Srila Bhakti Rakshak Sridhar Swami Maharaj. This is his Nectar of Instruction commentary. But he has spoken about atyahara briefly. So, Maharaj says that, just one second. Maharaj says that atyahara refers to whatever we collect and also to feed oneself more than necessary. So, over collection or over eating. Whatever I collect, I want a portion of that thing. We are all busily engaged in collecting things for our sense satisfaction. Whatever we shall require, we can transform that into sense pleasure. So we want food to survive, but we can transform that need into an act of sense gratification. You know, so eating can be a need, or eating can be an act of sense gratification. Similarly, we need a place to stay. It can be a need, but it can be an act of sense gratification also. You know, we sort of, you know, very poshly, you know, make it, you know, with perfect, you know, air conditioning and, you know, whatever, you know, pool, you know, a private swimming pool, private gym and all those things. I mean, I don't say that those who have it in their house, they are doing atyahar. It may be a need also, but I'm telling in general. So human beings have the capacity of transforming essential needs into sense gratification. You know, that's the whole thing, you know. Practically every single thing that you see in the market was once an essential need, but now it no longer fulfills essential needs, but it gratifies the senses. You know, slippers, for example, anything, dress that we wear is meant to cover our body, cover our modesty, and also to some extent protect us from the elements. But nowadays, the way we wear, not nowadays, for a long time, the way we wear, it's an act of fashion, you know, to attract people and things like that. Or, you know, we may need a communication. You know, it was letters, but now, you know, then came emails, then now WhatsApp and all kinds of communication. And it is no longer a basic need. People spend so much time in social media, right? They're completely absorbed and swimming in the addictive waters of social media. So the human being, and practically if you see, 90% of workforce is engaged in actually transforming essential needs into sense gratification. 90% of manpower and resources is utilized for the purpose of transforming actually essential needs into actually sense gratification. If all that 90% is cut, then 90% of the resources are saved for essential needs. Now you see, you know, people don't have food to eat, but they have so much gratification in the form of, you know, smartphones and things like that. People are so much time glued to their screen, which is not really needed to maintain the body and soul together, actually. But so much time is spent in that way that 90% of manpower and resources are used for non-essential things, for building up non-essential things. The whole of software industry, so many people engaging billions and trillions of dollars pumped into it. All is for mostly non-essential things, which are really not needed actually. But so much time, energy, manpower, money power, everything is wasted for that. That is the unique nature of human beings, that they can transform essential needs into actually sense gratification. So then Maharaj says, generally, we fix things in such a way that we can collect the maximum money, and with that money, we can earn some sense pleasure. That's how we plan. How we can maximize money and pleasure. Our relationship with this mundane world should not be for sense pleasure, but we should work as much as required to keep this body fit, because this body is the means to perform our sadhana for attaining any higher goal. So therefore, we should act to keep the body fit. But in trying to keep the body fit, the purpose of keeping the body fit is so that the consciousness can focus on Krishna. Consciousness can focus on Krishna. But in the name of trying to keep the body fit, we cannot allow our body to be completely absorbed in bodily consciousness. We cannot allow our consciousness to be completely absorbed in our body. So he says, money should be utilized not for sense pleasure, but to satisfy our duty. And the aim of our duty should not be to go downwards again, but it will be for the upavarga, crossing these three necessities of life to seek a higher purpose. Dharmasya hi apavargasya nartho arthayopakalpate, nartasya dharmaikantasya kamo labaya hi smritaha. Bhagavatam says that our endeavor should not be generally for sense gratification and gaining artha. So one who is engaged in dharma, he should not engage in dharma for the purpose of gaining artha and kama. Any act that is performed should be towards achieving apavarga, you know, crossing this material realm and entering the realm of liberation. That should be our aim. So we should not get stuck up with dharmartha kama, dharmartha kama, dharmartha kama like that. So he says, money should help us to charge our duty, and duty should be arranged in such a way that we shall inquire about ourselves and the environment. Who am I? Where am I? What is my aim in life? What is real satisfaction? Actually, we should engage, discharge our duty in such a way that we are asking these kind of essential questions. Right? Jivasya tattva jigyasa nartho yascheha karmabihi. A human being is meant to inquire about the absolute truth. Nothing else should be the goal of one's activities. So whatever essential things are needed to make this inquiry, of course, making inquiry means what? Not just inquiring and keeping quiet. After inquiring, when one comes to understand what is the ultimate goal of life and how that ultimate goal of life can be accomplished, then one engages in those activities to accomplish that ultimate goal of life. So for that, whatever is needed, we acquire that, and we don't accumulate more than that. But accumulating more than that will distract us from going towards that goal, actually. So he says that is the only requirement for us, and that should be our only aim. That should be the object of our life. By amassing money, the real principle is lost. If we are not genuine, then we will be carried away by money towards the exploiting world. We have to be careful. You know, these are things we should never be overconfident in the name of accumulating it for Krishna. Because when it is when we see too much money or resources, you know, we can always, our intelligence can get corrupt and diverted, and we may sort of start accumulating it for our own gratification, right? So he says, money may be collected, but that must be distributed for the service of the sampradaya, for the service of the Vaishnavas. So it's not that money cannot be collected. Money can be collected, but it should be used for the service of the Vaishnavas, and it should be used for the service of the sampradaya. He says, amassing money is a sign of deviation. generally, which means whatever is collected should be utilized. We cannot keep amassing, because wherever we amass money, there actually Kali resides. Whatever is there, it should be immediately utilized in the service of Krishna. So otherwise, if we keep on amassing more and more money, then we will start thinking in terms of doing some non-Krishna conscious business only using that money. When money comes, it should be immediately utilized in Krishna's service, right? So when Lakshmi is utilized in Krishna's service, or when Lakshmi is utilized in our Lord's service, then she wants to come more and more. But if we keep accumulating it, then that accumulated Lakshmi, instead of attracting Narayanachart, it starts attracting Kali only. So because that is the place where Parikshit Maharaj has allowed Kali to go and stay. Right? So generally, the devotees should engage themselves subjects of the Lord. But in the Gaudiya Math, we find that they are handling money, motor cars, etc. So actually, devotees and brahmacharis and sannyasis, especially, they are supposed to engage themselves in the subjects of the Lord. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam, Archanam. So these are the activities in which they are supposed to be engaged. But in Gaudiya Math, or in our case, ISKCON, we find that we are handling money, we are handling motor cars. But for what purpose? He says, Matala Harijana Vishaya Range Pujala Ragapatta Gaurava Bange. It is to show what is the Ragapatta. Ragapatta means the path of Raganuga Bhakti. So the path of Raganuga Bhakti. Generally, it is thought that one must give up everything and only through internal love worship the Lord and not by external resources. This you can say is one understanding. People think that if you are having resources, then you are not really worshiping the Lord. You cannot worship the Lord through external resources. You have to worship the Lord through internal love. So this is one understanding. So therefore, people think that those who are utilizing external things and external people in the service of the Lord, they really are not advanced. A really advanced person, you will be able to see him only in Radha Kund, wearing a simple two-piece dress and all the time sitting and chanting. Only he is actually worshipping the Lord through pure love. Those who are utilizing money and objects are all neophytes. This is one understanding. Okay. He says that they think that majesty and reverence are not necessary. Money and all that is majesty and reverence. But here, we are extensively handling the wealth of the outer world. Maharaj is asking, what is the meaning? Are we indulging in Atyahar? So, why do we engage all that money? He says, the meaning is to show that the Ragapatha is above all. The path of Raga is all. The position of those that are followers of the Ragapatha is very high. They have left everything and are taking the path of worshipping him in their heart. All this grandeur, all reverence, everything should go to serve them. So why is the Gaudiya Math utilizing all these kinds of wealth? It is to show that we will accept it and utilize it in serving those who are on the Ragapath. Those who are really qualified, those who are on the level of bhava and prema, those who have given up all the comforts of this material world just to worship Krishna, we will utilize it to serve them. in order to show where Lakshmi is meant to be used, we will collect all the Lakshmi and utilize it in their service. That's what Maharaj is indicating here. So he says, Pujala Ragapata. Pujala means worshipable. And Ragapata means the path of Raganuga Bhakti. Everything has its fulfillment if it can be connected to worshipping the feet of those that are living in that plane. Okay. So what exactly is the utility of wealth? The utility of wealth is in serving those who are serving Krishna full-fledged. Right. So he says, majesty, awe, reverence, wealth, everything is only meant to serve those Nishkinchanas who have made the Lord of love and beauty the all-in-all in their lives. Ultimately, everything is meant to serve those who have dedicated their lives purely for worshipping Krishna. Manasa deho geho jokichumur arpilun tuva pade nandakishor. Right. So he says, the whole world must learn this for its own welfare. And to teach this to the world, the Gaudiya Math is handling all these things. That, yes, we will collect. Why? Because we will collect to show what is the right utility of all this wealth. The right utility of all this wealth is to serve those who have dedicated their lives for serving Krishna. Right? Because ultimately, it is all Krishna's money. So if it is all Krishna's money, then all that should be utilized to serve those who are serving Krishna. Right? Like that. So, Maharaj says, while in Bombay, one Bengali gentleman who was an officer in the mint asked me, you have come to collect money, but you are a very rich man. So Maharaj had gone to solicit some donation. So the Bengali man said, oh, why you have asked to beg money? You are anyway a very rich man, right? He says, Maharaj replied, I told him, yes. We say we are rich and we also say that we are beggars. Now, Maharaj says, now how do you sell this? We must come to some understanding. How can someone be rich and at the same time be a beggar? He says that you say that we are rich. Why? Because we spend money like water. So we spend money just like that. We spend so much money just like spending water. That's why you say that we are rich. A man who has got so much money can spend his money like that. An ordinary man would agree that this must be superfluous money. Otherwise, a beggar would not spend money for such purposes. So, when you see the Gaudiya Math or ISKCON spending money, it may seem like, oh, this is too much lavish spending. Right? When we go to purchase for Krishna in the temple, you know, you don't really consider so much the cost and all that. You know, you want to purchase the most expensive things. But at home, when you have to utilize your meager salary to, you know, sort of manage the expenses, the monthly expenses, we are very, very actually, in one sense, very thoughtful. We plan, we budget everything and utilize, you know, do cost cutting here, there. You know, so we try to utilize money. Okay, someone says no sound. Others are able to hear my voice. Can others hear my voice? Am I audible? Okay, others are able to hear. Okay, fine. Thank you. Okay. So, therefore, he says that one who has got millions can throw away thousands for luxurious activities. You think we have got much money? But Maharaj says, but we say we are beggars with no money. We are beggars with no money, but still we spend money in such a way, right? Now the question will come whether what we spend will be for a good purpose or a bad one. So he's a doctor may not be wealthy. Of course, today, you know, the medical profession, you know, people earn a lot, but in those days, it may not be a vaidya is generally actually not so generally very, very wealthy generally, right? A doctor may not be wealthy, but he has got a motor car because he can attend many patients thereby. That is not luxury. So he says that in those days, in the days of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, you know, hardly in Calcutta, maybe a handful of people only had cars. Only 5, 6, 7 people only had cars. So it was a luxury. Now, he says, Bhaktivikshak Siddhar Swami Maharaj says, a doctor may have one of those 6 cars, but he may not be amongst the top 10 or even 100 most rich people of Calcutta. But because he is rendering a service which is life-saving, therefore every minute counts. So therefore he may have a car for rendering his service properly. So for him, car is a necessity but not a luxury. Right? When the purpose is proper, then it is no longer a luxury, but it is a necessity. He says, generally, men will think that one who has got a car or a plane must be a money man of high order. Then only he can keep such things. So he's telling that, you know, just like the just like this doctor, may not be a very rich person, but for him, it is a very essential commodity because he is engaged in actual life-saving services. So for him, it is not a luxury. But for business purposes, he may keep such things. A doctor may have many patients he can visit by motor car. We also use things in that way. Because we are engaged in Krishna's service, right? You may think that it is superfluous to decorate the deity, but we think that this is the fulfillment of life, right? The kind of dress that is used for actually, you know, dressing the deities. In the outside world also, people don't spend so much on dress. Of course, very love. People who just want to, I mean, if people spend that kind of money on their dress, you will tell them that these people are filthy rich and they have, they are completely bewildered about what to do with their money. You know, that is the kind of money that is spent in, you know, in reasonably good temples for dressing the deities. You know, these are like really designer clothes. You know, the deities only designer clothes. They don't wear ready-made t-shirts and, you know, like that. You know, they actually wear ready-made, you know, designer clothes. And many, many people, sometimes one dress to design, you know, there are about 50, 60 people who are involved in designing one set of clothes for the deities. You know, they do small things, you know, and it's like really lot of time and energy and creativity is involved in designing the clothes of the deities. In the outside world, if someone wears that kind of clothes, you know, it's definitely luxury. It cannot be actually in any sense, it cannot be you can say like necessity. But he says that, but in Gaudiya Math, we may use lot of money in a superfluous way to decorate the deity, and someone may think that this is superfluous, but we think this is the fulfillment of our life, because ultimately he is Shrirepati, he is the lord of Lakshmi, and all that Lakshmi meant to serve him, decorate him. Okay, so he should look like he is the Anantakoti Brahmanda Nayak. He should actually look like the lord of the whole universe or multi-million universes, you know. So that's what he says. All good things must be used to serve Narayana. So basically, if you see what the same point that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentioned, the essence of Atyahara. How do you avoid Atyahara? Atyahara cannot be avoided by just avoiding to use all objects, any objects, you know, avoiding any kind of sense gratification. That is not the way of accomplishing or overcoming Atyahara. To overcome Atyahara, one should understand that one should practice Yukta Vairagya. And Yukta Vairagya means not being attached to that object, but utilizing it in Krishna's service. And that is what is communicated here by his Srila Bhakti Rakshak Sridhar Swami Maharaj, who says that we spend millions, but we beg like beggars. Now, which person who spends millions will beg like a beggar? So that is when he begs for Krishna and spends for Krishna. One who has this mentality, this is the way overcoming Atyahara. Spend for Krishna and beg for Krishna, because a real millionaire would not want to beg, right? So one who is spending millions would not want to beg. So if you are utilizing, if you are spending millions for Krishna, and if you are still willing to beg, then we are actually practicing Yukta Vairagya, and in this way we can overcome Atyahara. That's what it says. That is our creed. Beggars we are, but still we spend money like water for decoration, for festivals, for the distribution of prasadam. We beg money and we spend lavishly, but not for ourselves. We feel the necessity of our particular nature. The real question is how we spend the money, not how much money we have got. So the real question is how we spend the money, not how much money we have got. So he says we are poor beggars, still we spend money like a rich man. So he says, last slide, and then we will pause for some discussion points. A rich man would be afraid to spend money like that. He says sometimes when rich people come and see how we spend in Gaudiya Math, they become afraid. You know, wealth only has its fulfillment in the service of those who are above this monetary world. The greatest goal possible is to worship the Lord and connect him with this world. Right? The greatest goal possible is to worship the Lord and connect him with this world. The world should know who is Krishna. The world should be in awe of Krishna. The world should notice Krishna. So unless you spend money for glorying Krishna in that way, for decorating Krishna in that way, how would the world know? And after all, whose money is it? It all belongs to Krishna. So in whose service should it be utilized? So this is Yukta Vairagya, where one has no desire to utilize it for one's own gratification, but one wants to utilize it for glorifying Krishna. This is Yukta Vairagya. And if we cultivate this mentality, This is the way of overcoming Atyahara. This is the presentation of Srila Bhakti Akshaksida Swami Maharaj. In this way, we have come to the end of discussion on Yukta Vairagya, sorry, Atyahara. In essence, how do we overcome Atyahara? The essence is by cultivating the mood of Yukta Vairagya. This is the essence of this whole presentation. So now we are going to start prayasa, over endeavoring for accumulating material things. So that is the same obstacle. But before we start that, if there are any quick comments, discussion points, questions on this theme of Atyahara, because we are going to end this topic here. If there are any discussion points, questions, comments, you can please raise and we can have a discussion, and then we can move forward to the next essay of Prayasa. Anything anyone would like to share? Yes, Mother Gail.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. Yes, Krishna. This last section really resonated with me, because I always feel so anxious when I see the amount of money being spent on flowers, you know, like the flower showers, you know, I mean, I don't know how many thousands of dollars spent on flowers. And I just sometimes I wonder, I guess maybe could that money be spent, better spent, you know, maybe on devotees in need or something. It's just the extravagance of the budget for flowers. I don't know how to feel more comfortable with that.
So is that a question or is that a comment, Mataji? I'm just trying to understand.
It's both. but more question, you know, how to feel more comfortable, you know, well, with this expenditure on flowers.
Well, it depends on the consciousness of the person. When the consciousness of the person is very clear that by actually perfectly glorifying the Lord and by worshipping the Lord and decorating the Lord and spending for the pleasure of Krishna, we do not lose, and Krishna will definitely take care of his devotees. When someone has, of course, it's not that we don't budget anything for taking care of devotees, because, you know, taking care of devotees is probably more important than even taking care of deity forms of the Lord. But it's not that, you know, you overdo one or the other. But like when Prabhupada came to first visited Vrindavan, he said that before even he thought about building Krishna Balaram temple, he first said, you should build an American house for my Western disciples to come and stay here. So when they have a proper place to stay, then they will feel that Vrindavan is their home. But if they don't have it, then because of their, you know, because we all are conditioned and we want some facilities, we may not feel that Vrindavan is our home. So like that. So Prabhupada did want very good facilities for his own disciples also. But having said that, it depends on the consciousness of the person who is doing it. If the consciousness is genuinely for pleasing Krishna, for perfectly glorifying Krishna, then automatically, you know, Krishna will reciprocate by taking care of the devotees. So, it all boils down to consciousness, actually, because the details may change. Some other devotee, there may be two devotees who may have perfect consciousness. One may utilize lot of money in rating the deities and you know, making bhoga for the devotees. Whereas another devotee may have perfect consciousness and he may spend lavishly in taking care of devotees. So both may have perfect consciousness, just that the flavor of their consciousness is slightly different. As long as it is perfectly rooted in our Vaishnava Siddhanta, then I think Krishna will protect both communities.
Okay, so you said that it depends on the consciousness, in which, for example, we do shower the deities with flowers, but is there any bad consciousness in which a person may do that?
Well, I mean, there are unlimited, you know, it could be for multiple reasons. You know, people could do, you know, people could take the contract for purchasing flowers, and they may take a commission for purchasing those flowers, you know, or they may, whatever it could be, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, not able to think, but there could be many ways in which
some
one can.
Selfish, selfish motive.
Or he may be the, he may actually own a flower, you know, shop. This, and he may say that, you know, you should do this Pushpa Abhishek. The year, this should be the most important, you know, festival. Why? Because if the Pushpa Abhishek is there, I will supply the flowers and I will have a lot of, I can make. Or you could also do it for, as Tiffany Mataji is mentioning here, to show off your material wealth, you just to try to impress others, you know, and just see, you know, the kind of things that I can do in my temple, instead of, rather than glorifying Krishna and trying to attract people to Krishna's attention of people to Krishna, one may try to attract people's attention to oneself. Like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yes, very nice, Prabhu. Thank you.
Hare Krishna, thank you. Okay, Simki Mataji.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji.
Hare Krishna.
Prabhuji, actually, I have some health issues, so I have the habit of collecting medicines in advance. Means sometimes medicines are not available, so I have the collecting. I have the habit of collecting the medicines from beforehand only. So is this also something?
Yeah, I mean, you are clearly telling that sometimes medicines are not available, they are not in stock, and because your health very much depends on those medicines. So for that purpose, I mean, you are not collecting objects of sense gratification. You are collecting essential medicines because sometimes you have observed that they go out of stock. So I don't think that's really, I don't think that is over accumulation. I don't think so.
Okay, thank you.
Hare Krishna. Anything else anyone would like to share, ask, add before we move on to the next topic of prayas? Okay, so if there are no further discussion, okay, this one hand up. Sachi Yashoda Mataji.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji, pranams. Prabhuji, as I understand, please correct me. As I understand from the question of Simki Mata, I think she is thinking, because I perceive like that, Prabhu, that see, because she's collecting it, maybe she's depriving somebody else who may be in need of that medicine, same medicine.
Well, that is a good, you can say, if that is really, if that mentality is there, it is very good. But she did mention that, you know, her health is, you know, she has some chronic illness for which she may need the medicines. So if she's really like collecting medicines for few years down the line or few months down the line, then that is definitely, you know, you may be depriving others of their medicines. But at least if you just want to be safe, so that, you know, in sudden the medicine goes out of stock, then you don't have. So then if one is really concerned about that, then one has to see what is our mentality in collecting other things which may be of our, you know, which may not be essentials like medicines, but which may be actually luxury products. Do we have a tendency to over accumulate those things also. So then we definitely, you know, we may have that mentality. But she is giving a very specific example of medicines. And of course, one should definitely not accumulate it to such a level that you'd start depriving other people also. But yeah.
Okay. Thanks, Ravaji. Because even I have come across some people like that. So I was just saying, they keep in stock. So I was just thinking on those same lines. That's why I asked the question, Ravaji. Okay. Yeah.
Anything else before we move ahead? Okay, so now we will start discussing on the next topic, which is prayasa. Pratyahara prayasa, the second obstacle in one's devotional service. Okay, this is prayasa. So, what is prayasa? Prayasa means over endeavoring for achieving material things. What is the problem with over endeavoring? The problem with over endeavoring is that it increases our thirst to enjoy it. Because whatever endeavor we put, because no one wants to put useless endeavor. Okay. No one wants to endeavor. No one wants to endeavor for doing things or accumulating things which they don't want to enjoy. And on the contrary, whatever we put ever to get, to the extent we have put endeavor, to that extent we become attached to it. And we want to utilize it in our own, for our own enjoyment, right? So to the extent that I have seen one devotee with whom I was traveling, I mean, very sincere devotee, you know. So he was traveling in a train where they had it came with complimentary meal, and we are not supposed to eat non-prasadam, right? So because it gave the complimentary meal and we had paid the money for that ticket, he was like, oh, you know, this is, you know, money has been taken. So the devotee was almost ready to eat it, because how can I not eat, because, you know, this is not for free. Money has been taken. So that is the mentality, actually. Naturally, when we endeavor to get something, we want to enjoy it. Sometimes, even though it may be detrimental for devotional service, but I have endeavored for it, right? But so that is why over endeavor, that is one reason why over endeavoring is wrong. And second is, when you over endeavor, any kind of endeavor will take time. And when it takes your time, that additional endeavoring will take our time away from us, which we could have potentially used in endeavoring for pleasing Krishna, Guru and Vaishnavas. So therefore, over endeavoring is like a, you know, it has this two kinds of issues. One is it increases our thirst to enjoy that object. It increases our thirst to enjoy that object because we have endeavored so much for it. And the second thing is, the very act of endeavoring takes our time away from Krishna, away from engaging in Krishna's service. So for these two reasons, this prayasa or over endeavoring for material things is actually very detrimental for our progress in Krishna consciousness. Right? So then he says that if prayas is not given up, devotion will never arise. The word prayasa means endeavor or useless labor. Useless labor means what? Useless labor means it has no utility in Krishna's service or in our spiritual progress. Okay, so that is actually useless labor. So then he says, spiritual life is nothing other than pure devotion unto the Supreme Lord. Spiritual life is nothing other than pure devotional, pure devotion to the Supreme Lord. Devotion cannot be defined by any symptoms other than full surrender and subordination unto the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. Right? There is no other symptom. So devotion cannot be defined by any other symptom other than full surrender and subordination to the Supreme Lord. That is the only symptom of pure devotional service. Right? Full surrender and subordination are the natural, eternal constitutional duties of the living entities. So full surrender means what? Anukulyasya sankalpo pratikulyasya varjanam rakshishyati iti vishwaso goptruptve varanam tata dhainyam atmanivedanam shadvidha shagati. Right. So what are the symptoms of surrender? That one constantly thinks about accepting things which are very favorable for Krishna consciousness, accepting things or activities or choices which will please Guru, Krishna and Vaishnavas. Right? And pratikulyasya varjanam, and rejecting that which will take us away from Krishna, rejecting those things or activities which will please Guru, Vaishnavas and sadhus, we reject that. Rakshishyati iti vishwaso, acting with the faith that Krishna will protect me. I don't have to over endeavor for my own, I don't have to over endeavor for taking care of myself. Krishna definitely protects me. Goptruptve varnam tata, not only that, Krishna also will maintain me. One should have that faith also. Dainyam, and one should have absolute humility. One has. This is a symptom of surrender. A symptom of surrender is actually humility. This is actually a symptom of surrender. And atmanivedanam, surrender, offering everything that one has for the service of Krishna. These are actually symptoms of surrender and subordination to Krishna. Therefore, only devotional service is the natural propensity or inherent occupation. So if one, see, prayas means over endeavoring on for one's occupation, right? So he says that the question of unfavorable endeavor, because prayas has to be there in bhakti. So prayas, the literal meaning of prayas means endeavor. So because devotional service is the natural propensity of the soul, engaging or endeavoring for performing devotional service is not unfavorable prayas. It is actually a very favorable prayas. So, are endeavoring to do those things or accept those things which are favorable for Krishna, endeavoring to consciously avoid things which are unfavorable for my service. This is not actually unfavorable prayas. This is actually very favorable prayas, right? This endeavor has to be done. And this is natural endeavor of the soul, right? So he says, in one's inherent occupation, there is no need for prayas. So what is one's inherent occupation? Inherent occupation is devotional service. Okay. In one inherent occupation, there is no need for prayers. Still, actually, for the living entity, for the living, there is no need for prayers, means there is no need for endeavor. So, can you think of some activity in this material world, in our conditioned state, something which we can do without endeavoring? You know, if it is available, without endeavoring, without trying hard, what do we engage in? Without trying hard, what do we engage in? Without over endeavoring, our natural engagement, without forcing ourselves, if we have to do, what will we engage in? Without forcing ourselves, what will we naturally engage in? Anyone? Breathing is one. Yes, definitely. Breathing. Of course, in COVID time, sometimes people can, you know, will have to do a lot of endeavor to breathe also. But yes, definitely. Anything else? Sleeping. Yeah, you don't have to really endeavor to sleep, you know, automatically. If you have not slept for a while, you will automatically feel sleepy. What else? Any kind of sense gratification, right? Any kind of sense gratification, we don't have to really endeavor for it. You know, naturally it happens. You know, we without much endeavor, we, you know, if it is available, then if the objects of sense gratification are available, then we naturally engage in that sense gratification. There is no additional endeavor that is needed for that, right? So, but if we are not conditioned, in our pure state, without any conditioning, we naturally actually would engage in devotional service. The living entity would actually naturally engage in devotional service. This is the natural position of the living entity if there is no conditioning. In the absence of conditioning, the living entity, without any extra endeavor, would naturally engage in Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Pada Sevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmanivedanam. One would naturally engage in that. But unfortunately, we are not in our unconditioned state, right? We are in our conditioned state. Okay. Still, in the individual living entity's conditioned state, there is need for a small amount of prayers in order to cultivate devotional service, right? So if we were not conditioned, then Toyime ananya vishaya matir madupate asakrit ratim udvahat adda gange vogam udanvati. As Kunti Maharani says, that you know, that is a natural state of a pure devotee's mind. You know, that the mind flows automatically towards the lotus feet of Krishna. Ananya vishaya, and it does not get distracted with any other things. That is a natural swabhaviki. Ishte swarasi raga paramavishtata bhavet tanmayi yabhavet bhaktir sa atra ragatmika udita. So in this Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Srila Rupa Goswami defines what is this ragatmika bhakti? What is this bhakti at the stage of prema, especially which is seen in the Vrajavasis? How would you define love that they have? So he says, Ishte Swarasiki Raga. Raga, what Raga means, Ishte, unto the object of love, Swarasiki Paramavishtata. A very natural thirst and thirst-induced absorption. Right? So, like Mother Gail spoke about this Pushpabhishek. So, when Vrajavasis used to see a flower, they would say, oh, how nice it would look in the garland of Krishna. If they look, while they are milking, they'll think, oh, what preparation I should prepare for feeding Krishna, right? So this is Swabhaviki. Swabhaviki means natural. Endeavor has to be made to do something which is not so natural to us. So here Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is mentioning that in the pure state, in the non-conditioned state, this thirst for the object of love is very natural, intense thirst. Ishte swarasiki raga paramavishtata bhavet. So he says, what is this raga? What is this raga means? Very spontaneous thirst for pleasing Krishna and the thirst induced absorption in activities like cooking for Krishna stringing garlands for Krishna. These are like very intensely absorbing activities. And one naturally, you get 1 minute time, you want to immediately string a garland for Krishna. You get some 5 minutes extra time, you want to cook a bhoga for pleasing Krishna. So, and this is very spontaneous. So, how would you define an activity which is devoid of endeavor, devoid of prayas? The definition is, if it's spontaneous, natural, you don't have to think to do it. You get some extra time, you naturally do it. So that is that which is free of prayas. So ishte swarasiki raga paramavishtata bhavit. So raga means a very spontaneous attraction, a spontaneous thirst to please Krishna, and the thirst induced absorption in activities for pleasing Krishna. That is actually raga. Tanmayi yabhaved bhakti. And that bhakti, when someone engages in the activities of devotional service, being triggered by this raga, spontaneous thirst and absorption for pleasing Krishna, then that is called as ragatmika bhakti. And this ragatmika bhakti is actually the natural propensity of the soul. Just like nimnam apa iva swayam. Nimnam apa iva swayam. When there is a slopy surface and when you put water on the top of that slopy surface, the water will naturally flow the higher position to the lower position. This is natural for water. So similarly, what is the natural propensity of the living entity is to serve Krishna in a very, very loving way, in one of the five rasas. This is the natural propensity of the living entities in its unconditioned state. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, even so, therefore, to perform devotional service for the living entities, it is endeavorless, prayasless. There is no over endeavoring needed. Over endeavoring means you are swimming against the current. You are swimming against the current of your desires, right? You have to over endeavor to do something. But in the pure state, the soul does not end to perform Krishna consciousness. He does not have to endeavor. It naturally happens. That is a natural state. Swarasiki paramavishtata. That is a very spontaneous absorption. It is not a conscious endeavor. It's not a conscious endeavor. It is unconscious competence. So the person is unconsciously competent. Without even thinking, he is actually trying to please Krishna. That is a natural position of the soul. But in the conditioned state, because that natural propensity is covered, right? So just like, iron filings would naturally get attracted to a piece of magnet, right? But if the iron filings are rusted, then that attractive capacity is compromised, but it is not completely lost. So therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, even though the natural inherent occupation of the soul in its pure state is actually to engage devotional service, but in the conditioned state, there is a need for a small amount of prayas in order to cultivate devotional service. Okay. So, small amount of prayas is needed for a person who has faith. Okay. But one who does not have faith, then he will not do prayas for performing devotional service. Okay. So if one is not convinced of, that the goal of my life is to engage in devotional service, then why would he engage in, why would he endeavor for performing devotional service? He would not, right? So therefore, he says that in the conditioned state, so sadhakas, we are in conditioned state, right? So in conditioned state, there is a small amount of prayas that is needed to cultivate devotional service. We all have to cultivate, wake up in the morning, which may be against the current of our desires. We don't want to wake up early in the morning. We don't want to sit and chant. Even though we are convinced that this is what we are supposed to do, but still we may not want to do it. So some little amount of prayas is needed for this. Except this little prayas, all other kinds of prayas are unfavorable for devotional service. So, what is that endeavor that falls in the category of unfavorable prayas? What is that endeavor that falls in the category of unfavorable prayas? Right? So he says that any endeavor that is not meant, that is not actually for cultivating devotional service, for a sadhaka, it falls within the category of unfavorable prayers. Okay. That's what he says. So, anything that is not meant for cultivating our devotional service, it falls within the category of unfavorable prayers. But endeavoring for performing devotional service, that is not unfavorable prayers. That kind of prayers is needed. You know, we have to engage in that kind of prayers. And he says, prayas is of two kinds, jnana prayas and karma prayas. In jnana prayas, the feeling of oneness or kevala dvaita arises. This is also known as sayujya or merging or brahma nirvana, absorption in the supreme. Okay. See, actually, this unfavorable jnana is of two types. Unfavorable jnana is of two types. We do know that the living entity is qualitatively one with Krishna and is quantitatively different from Krishna, right? Even though we do know that, as devotees, we do know that, even though we also know that qualitatively also the living entity is not exactly the same with Krishna, right? Because the living entities have only 50 qualities and infinitesimal quantities, but Krishna has 64 qualities in full, in infinite quantity. So therefore, the living entity is not even qualitatively one with Krishna. So we do say like that, but when Prabhupada does use this terminology that the living entity is qualitatively one with Krishna, but in reality, what Prabhupada means is that the living entity is qualitatively similar to Krishna rather than actually qualitatively one with Krishna. Okay. So if you compare matter and Krishna, the living entity is qualitatively more similar to Krishna than matter. That's what Prabhupada means or indicates when he says qualitative oneness. But in reality, there is no quality. It is not literally qualitative oneness. But nevertheless, there is definitely a qualitative similarity between the living entity and the Supreme Lord, right? So, but there is definitely a quantitative difference, and also there is a qualitative difference also. The 14 additional qualities which Krishna only has, you know, a living entity cannot even imagine possessing those qualities actually, right? So at no stage of perfection, even when he becomes a perfected living entity, or even the Nitya Siddha living entities cannot have those 14 qualities at all. Only Krishna can have. Right? So, so therefore, there is qualitative difference and there is quantitative difference, and there is definitely some qualitative similarity. So all these three things are true. The qualitative oneness is true, the qualitative difference is true, the quantitative difference is also true. Okay. But when it comes to those practicing jnana yoga or those on the path of jnana, they primarily focus on the qualitative oneness. That's their prime meditation, on the qualitative oneness between Krishna and the living entities, right? But the devotees, even though they are aware of qualitative oneness, but their primary focus is on the qualitative difference and the quantitative difference, because that is what enhances the service mode. Otherwise, if we think that, you know, I am same, Krishna is same, you know, Krishna and myself are same. If the focus is on similarity, then naturally we would think, then why should I serve and he receive the service? Why should I always serve and why should he always receive the service? You know, this doubt always comes. So therefore, this meditation on the qualitative oneness actually has the potential. I'm not telling that it will kill service attitude, but it has the potential to kill the service attitude when overemphasized or when over meditated upon. So therefore, when our acharyas talk about the nature of the living entity and the nature of the Supreme Lord, they primarily focus on the 14 qualities which the living entity does not have. So, and also on the quantitative difference between living entity and the Supreme Lord, so that ultimately we do understand that we are supposed to serve the Lord, and the Lord is always supposed to receive the service, and constitutionally our position is to serve Krishna. Jivera Swarupai Krishnaira Nityadas. And also because of meditating on this qualitative oneness, they actually, and also that actually kills the service mode, and also does not create the appetite for establishing a relationship with Krishna. So therefore, the best possible desire that they get or goal that they aspire for is to merge in the impersonal Brahma Jyoti. Because qualitatively both are one, right? So they want to merge in the impersonal Brahma Jyoti. This is the desire that they get. And if we endeavor to understand and meditate on these aspects of knowledge, the qualitative oneness aspect of the knowledge, then this leads to, this is called as Jnana Prayas. Jnana Prayas are over endeavor in the direction of knowledge. So this is called as Jnana. So he says there are two types of prayas. One is called as Jnana Prayas and the other is called as Karma Prayas. In Jnana Prayas, the feeling of oneness or the Kevala Dvaita arises. So the feeling of oneness is not wrong. Okay. There is definitely a sense in which there is oneness between the living entity and the Supreme Lord. But the problem is when it is overemphasized. That is where the problem is. The problem is when it is overemphasized, then it is a problem. Okay. So, and then this leads to a desire for merging in the impersonal Brahma Jyoti rather than going to the spiritual world and serving Krishna. Okay. And this Jnana Prayas is hostile to spiritual life. This is explained in the Vedic literatures, Mundaka Upanishad, in the following words. Okay. This Jnana Prayas is hostile to spiritual life. So actually, if you see here, this Jnana Prayas is not talking about Mayavad. Okay. So the difference between Mayavad and proper Jnana Prayas. Okay. Proper Jnana Prayas is, you may accept the personal form of the Lord. One may not necessarily reject the personal form of the Lord, but at the same time, one may cultivate a desire to merge in the impersonal Brahma Jyoti. Okay. So, in one sense, this is definitely better than Mayavad, where the Mayavadis actually consider the form of Krishna, the name of Krishna, and his activities, his abode, everything to be an illusion. This is outright offensive. This is outrageously offensive. Okay. Whereas Jnana Prayas is not exactly offensive, but Jnana Prayas kills the desire to serve, to actively serve Krishna. Okay. So therefore, in jnana prayas, there, you know, you can say, you can actually say that jnana prayas is of two types. Okay. One is mayavadi jnana prayas, and then there is actually the jnana yogi jnana prayas. Okay. So of the two, both are detrimental to cultivating a desire for service. Both are detrimental for cultivating a desire for service. But of the two, this mayavadi jnana prayas is outright, it is outright offensive. Okay. And such a person, see, mayavadis also aspire for merging the Brahma Jyoti, but they don't even get that. For offending the Lord in this way, they actually remain in the material world. Okay. And they take Asura Yoni or demoniac species, because generally atheists take up to demoniac species, and actually these Mayavadis are actually atheists in one sense. Right? They are dangerous, more dangerous than atheists, because they look like very pious and very God-fearing, God-loving people, but in reality they are blasphemers. Okay? And very deceptive people. So such people, their destination, even though they may aspire for Brahma Jyoti, but they don't achieve Brahma Jyoti, they become demons actually. And this is outright offensive. Devotees should not. So this is wrong philosophy. Okay. Mayavadi's wrong philosophy or deviant philosophy. Whereas jnana yoga, form of jnana prayas, is not wrong philosophy. This is the problem of wrong emphasis. Okay. This is the problem of wrong emphasis. So therefore, when there, like say for example, we said that a devotee emphasizes the quantitative difference and the qualitative difference between Krishna and the living entity, whereas he does not emphasize the qualitative oneness, because the qualitative oneness actually kills the service attitude. No, for that reason, this is dangerous. But of the two, this Mayavadi type of jnana prayas is very, very dangerous, because it is outright wrong deviant philosophy, and it can create such kind of offensive mentality in our heart actually. Like the, I am having some problem with my can you hear my voice and can you see the screen? Okay, you can see the screen and you can hear my voice both. But I think my my PowerPoint has hung. Okay, I'm sorry. Okay. You must still be able to hear me, but you may not be able to see the screen because there was a problem with PowerPoint. It just... stopped working. So just give me a minute. I will just fix this problem. Just give me just 1 minute. I'll just fix this problem. So we are currently discussing about prayas, which is the second obstacle to progressing on the path of devotional service. And this prayas, we saw it has two types. One is karma prayas and the other is jnana prayas. Okay. Anyway. So, I will just share the screen again. Okay. So, this jnana prayas, so we were discussing that, I have to write this again. I was mentioning that there are jnana prayas is of two types. Right? One is the Mayavadi jnana prayas. And then there is Jnana Yogi Jnana Prayas. I said that this is outright offensive. Okay. And such people go to hell, or such people go to demoniac species. They take birth in demoniac species. Okay. For rejecting the form of the Lord. Whereas a Jnana Yogi, so this is a problem of, I said that deviant philosophy or wrong philosophy. Okay. But the problem of this Jnana Yogi Jnana Prayas is the problem of wrong emphasis. Right? Like I mentioned, there are three real things, right? The qualitative oneness is real. Okay. This is what they emphasize on. And there are two other things which are real, which is quantitative difference and qualitative difference. Okay. All three are real. The qualitative oneness between the jiva and the absolute truth is real. The quantitative difference between jiva and the Supreme Lord is real, actually, right? We have infinitesimal, presence of that quality, and the Lord has that quality in infinite proportions, right? We have infinitesimal, but the Lord has in infinite proportions. And the qualitative difference between the Jivatma and Krishna is also real, because the Lord has 64 qualities and Jivatma has only 50 qualities, right? While the Jnana Yogis emphasize on the qualitative oneness, whereas the devotee emphasizes on the quantitative and qualitative difference between the jiva and Krishna. So what is the result? This kind of emphasis breeds service attitude and a mood of being the servant. Okay. It breeds service attitude and a mood of being the servant. Whereas, if you see the overemphasis on qualitative oneness, actually it does two things. Kills the skills service attitude, okay, and it generates a desire for Sayujya. Merging, impersonal merging. Okay, so this is the problem. Okay, so so that's why if you see, but therefore in this way both are detrimental. Both are detrimental, both are impersonalistic philosophy. And Prabhupada, even though there is a difference between the Jnana Yogi's impersonalism and a Mayavadi's impersonalism, Prabhupada for most of the time does not bother to differentiate between the two. Why? Because both kill the service attitude. One is outright wrong and deviant and offensive, whereas the Jnana Yogi's philosophy is not offensive and deviant in that sense, but it is definitely a philosophy of misplaced emphasis which can actually kill the desire to serve. So therefore, Prabhupada really does not bother to differentiate between Jnana Yoga and Mayavad. He puts both of them in the category of, impersonalism, like that. So we are currently discussing about Prayas, and which is over endeavoring for anything other than devotional service, cultivating our devotional service. For practicing sadhaka, that is prayas. And this prayas is of two types, jnana prayas and karma prayas. In that we are trying to understand what is jnana prayas. Okay. Now he is going to quote some verses to help us understand what is this jnana prayas. But before we get into that discussion, I want to pause for a few minutes to see if there are any quick discussion points, comments, questions on this topic before we move ahead, because we have another 5 minutes left. So if there are no further questions or discussion points, I will maybe cover one or two more slides. But if there are some questions, then I would like to pause and have a discussion. Anything anyone would like to share, ask, you can please raise your hands or you can type it in the chat box, whatever you feel convenient. Yes, Tiffany Mataji.
Hi Krishna, Prabhuji, please accept my humble obeisances. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you. This class has been amazing. I just was wondering if you could say a little bit more about prayas in as you mentioned, as in the conditioned state. It's necessary for a small amount of prayas. And I'm just trying to get a better grip on that, because for me it's kind of hard to understand, how you determine how much over endeavoring, how much you're over endeavoring for devotional service. And just if you could just say a little bit more about that, please.
Well, in one sense, if you see, any amount of endeavor undergirds for the purpose of cultivating our devotional service is not over endeavoring, or it's not unfavorable over endeavoring at all. That is what he's talking about. So any amount of, because it is eventually going to cleanse our unfavorable conditionings, and it is going to bring us more and more closer to Krishna. And such kind of over endeavoring, it may look like over endeavor in the beginning, but gradually when we progress with the removal of the layers of conditionings, we will realize that it's actually not over endeavor. It's becoming more and more easier and easier and easier. So I don't know if it's relevant to your question. I mean, I am answering based on what exactly I have understood. But is that relevant, Mataji? Okay. Tiffany Mataji, yes.
Okay, I'm sorry. I muted and couldn't unmute again. Yes. So that was helpful. And now my next question is, when, say, for instance, in service, if you keep facing obstacles over mm-hmm. and over again, how do you know when it's time to maybe shift your focus to another place and do a different service, or if you should just keep going on? And like you said, eventually things will start to become easier.
Well, I mean, there are certain non-negotiables in Krishna consciousness. What if you find chanting your 16 rounds itself very difficult? I mean, these are definitely non-negotiables. But if you, and what if you don't get any taste in hearing Srimad Bhagavatam? Should you just move ahead, you know, considering that, you know, you don't have to endeavor in that direction? No, there are certain non-negotiables in the on the path of dual service. But when it comes to certain, you can say, like a type of service which may not suit our nature so much, is it that we have to persist doing that service only, and that service only will become very easy for us to perform in future? May not necessarily be. The attitude of serving is non-negotiable, but what service we choose to perform certainly, you know, can be negotiated. If we are finding it very difficult, and if our consciousness is not able to focus on pleasing Krishna and pleasing devotees, we can always take superior guidance and always, you know, ask, you know, is it okay? I'm finding it very difficult. I'm finding it difficult to focus my consciousness in pleasing Krishna. Should I just continue this service, or is there a scope for me to engage in some other service where I can more peacefully absorb my mind in pleasing Krishna? So that is always there. That scope is always there. But the principle is guidance. You know, we should have someone in whom we have trust, who is more advanced, and in whom we have trust that not only that he is at, we don't just have trust in that person's advancement, we also have trust in that person's well-wishing nature. So, yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Prabhuji. Very, very helpful. I appreciate it. Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Mr. Ponda devotees?
Hare Krishna, Dandatram.
Dandatram.
Now in Bhaktya Lok, it is for devotees. Mm-hmm. And devotees are already aware of Krishna's personality. Mm-hmm. So when we say Gyan Prayas, mm-hmm. are we not beyond this, or is there a certain stage we also may fall in this Gyan Prayas?
Good question. The question is, the book Bhaktya Loka is essentially meant for devotees. And as devotees, we are already aware of Krishna's personality. So, are we prone to this kind of jnana prayas that is being described here by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur here? So, this is a very relevant question. The point is, being devotees, we may become indiscriminate in studying literatures which may not necessarily fall within the purview of devotional service. Okay. In the name of reading Vedic literatures, we may read many, many different literatures which may actually not be pure devotional, but which may fall within the category of actually jnana. And it may fall within the category of these two different types of jnana. It may fall, it be written by Mayavadis also, or it may actually be the jnana yoga type of jnana prayas also. But in the name of you know, studying Vedic literatures, we may end up reading these kind of literatures, and this lack of discrimination can actually be jnana prayas. So I mean well-intentioned, properly guided devotees will certainly not engage in jnana prayas, but definitely the very fact that we are discussing about atyahara prayasa prajalpa niyamagraha, the very fact that he is talking about it, it means that devotees can are prone to, you know, perfect devotees are certainly not prone to atyahara prayas and everything and any of these things, but then misguided conditioned sadhakas can always go in the direction of these kind of prayas. You know, how many devotees do we see reading all kinds of literatures, you know, reading secular books, and so many other things, but the danger is always there. So even though it may be for the purpose of preaching, but when it can cross the limit and it can start affecting our consciousness, we do not know. That is why Bhaktivinoda Thakur is mentioning about it.
Yes, Guru, thank you.
Hare Krishna. Okay, so I have two more questions in the chat box. I'll quickly take that and then we will pause for the day. Okay, both questions are same. Is over endeavoring occupation for collecting money and donating in temple or in temple related projects, is it good prayas? Well, it depends. We may think that, I am good at making money and when I donate, people recognize me, and this is more pleasurable than actually the pleasure of chanting and hearing. So I will do it. So even though we're utilizing that money for serving Krishna, but if you are neglecting the non-negotiable things of Krishna consciousness for making that money, even though it may be utilized in Krishna's service, it may not be the best thing to do. So it can be prayas. And another question is it okay to endeavor for promotion at work? Yes, why not? As long as I won't say yes or no, but it depends on what is the result of that. You know, some people they take promotion so that they get a pay hike, because of which they can plan and retire early also. Or sometimes when you get a promotion, your nature of work may be such that you may be able to take more time for your Krishna consciousness. So there are many, many aspects to it. So I cannot give one answer. It's not that, endeavoring for promotion, I can't say it is prayas or no prayas, but there are so many other details which need to be considered. And, we have to understand the consciousness of the person who is inclined to make that endeavor for promotion. We have to understand the consciousness of that person. We also should understand the repercussions of making such an endeavor, how it will affect the spiritual life, and all those things have to be considered overall to come to a conclusion that whether it is an endeavor, whether it is prayas or not. So there is no one word yes or no answer to this question. There are so many factors which need to be considered. That's why last time also I mentioned the same thing. There is no substitute for there is no substitute for personal guidance. You know, personal guidance is very critical. So when proper personal guidance is there, then one can overcome this. Okay. Anyway, I think we have to pause here. Any other questions if I have not taken, or some discussion points if I have not taken, please raise it in the next discussion point. We can always discuss. So otherwise, we will pause here. Thank you all very much for your very patient listening and your enthusiastic participation. So hoping to have your association next week all. So thank you very much. Ki jai, Shri Bhaktivinoda Thakur ki jai, Shri Bhaktialoka ki jai. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much.